Building 7 was never hit by a plane. Why did it fall down?
There was never a steel building that ever collapsed.
And all the wackos would be like, Building 7, Building 7. I'd be like, shut up, wackos.
And Donald Trump, which I'll give you a copy
I've seen it.
In his own words, says,
I happen to think that they had not only a plane, but they had bombs that exploded almost simultaneously, because I just can't imagine.
The evidence in the Twin Towers and the third skyscraper.
It was a brainwashing operation.
That's the question.
And 60%, 60%.
I don't think what your views are.
60% agreed with me about the questions I'm raising about 9/11. 60% of the respondents.
It's the Dean Show.
Today we'll be talking about the biggest event in U.S. history that reshaped how Americans viewed Islam and Muslims. But, alhamdulillah, we are seeing the tide is shifting. Conversations on this topic are happening. Not just on the fringes, but in the mainstream. We're seeing it on the news. Senators, members of Congress are asking questions. Even some of the biggest voices in media are starting to ask these questions also that were once considered off limits. The event that launched us into war after war that reshaped how the American public looked at Muslims and Islam, it's being re-examined. For over two decades, the shadow of that day reshaped our foreign policy, our media, and the subconscious of every American. But now, something is changing. And to talk about that shift, I'm joined by someone who's been ahead of this curve for years. Probably the most qualified people that I know to talk about this topic. Dr. Kevin Barrett is a PhD scholar, a former professor at the University of Wisconsin. He was let go not for misconduct, but for doing what this country was once proud of, encouraging students to think critically, to question narratives, freedom of speech, to explore uncomfortable truths. His outspokenness brought him to Fox News.
Back in the book segment tonight, there's a fringe element out there that believes the U.S. government orchestrated 9/11, that is, President Bush and the American military killed 3,000 people. One of those pushing this theory is Kevin Barrett, who actually taught at the University of Wisconsin this fall. He joins us now from Madison. You know, there's no sense in debating this issue. I had one of your compadres on a couple of months ago.
Well, you know, Bill, it's actually been one of the best things that ever happened to me. And in fact, we're not a fringe element. The latest polls show that 84% of the American people do not accept the 9/11 Commission report. Only 16% of the American people believe the government is telling the truth
about
9/11.
What poll is that?
That's a New York Times poll that came out just several months ago. Instance,
It seems to be a big story at the President of the United States.
After 9/11.
Hold it.
BBC News printed.
Why they're not taking you back? Because you're irresponsible. You can't back up what you say. You're a propagandist.
You know,
they're
Bill, you've been saying I'm crazy every time you've had this subject on your show.
Correct.
But you know something? Maybe I am crazy to go on the show with you.
Maybe.
But you know, I get email from a lot of people. Most of it's supportive, but some of those people say I'm crazy. And whenever I get one of those emails, I write back and I say, you know, anybody who would email a crazy person to tell them they're crazy is crazy. And any show host who would invite a crazy person on their show to tell them they're crazy is even crazier. So I guess that makes two of us, Bill.
Where he was famously debating Sean Hannity.
Most people think
We just had a poll here in Madison, and we found that 90% of the respondents at Channel 3000 poll said that I should be allowed to teach. Only 10% said I shouldn't.
That's the question.
And 60%.
I don't think what your views are.
60% agreed with me about the questions I'm raising about 9/11. 60% of the respondents.
I think you're
in the minority.
Right to speak. I don't think this is the proper forum, though, for people that hold extremist views like yourself. Reasonable
No, you guys are extremists. Fox News
extremist.
Is the biggest bunch of extremists on the planet.
But reasonable people see you as an extremist, and I don't think you're the most appropriate guy to teach that class.
I don't think you're the most appropriate guy to be on the airwaves spewing your venom
That's my point.
Throughout this country. I think you guys should be taken off the airwaves because you're the guys who are.
At that time, his words, his views were controversial. But today, the biggest name Fox News has ever produced, Tucker Carlson, that's right, is asking those very same questions Dr. Barrett raised years ago. Dr. Barrett, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Eddie. Assalamu alaikum. Great to be back with you.
Wa alaikum salam. Greetings of peace. How have you been?
I'm doing well. Alhamdulillah. I moved to Morocco about 2 years ago, and it was a little bit of an adjustment. but it's gone great overall. I'm very happy to be here, hearing the Avan five times a day, living with people who see things closer to the way I do. So, alhamdulillah, it's a great place.
Give us a little bit of recap of that history that I opened up with, professor at the Wisconsin University, and then you were let go. Was it for misconduct?
No, actually, they did a very thorough investigation just to see if there maybe had been some kind of misconduct somewhere, and they came up empty. And basically, this was after I was ambushed by Fox News. It started with a right-wing radio host in Milwaukee named Jessica McBride, and it was an orchestrated campaign to try to produce some mainstream media publicity against the 9/11 truth movement in general, and the professors who were jumping on board with Scholars for 9/11 Truth in particular. So this was in June of 2006, and that pretty much killed my academic career because I didn't want to roll over and go away like my administration suggested I should. So they did investigate me, and they found that I had high ratings as a teacher and I'd never done anything wrong. So they said, well, we're really sorry, we can't fire this guy. And then the Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature voted almost unanimously, I think it was, among the Republicans, to have the university fire me. But the university refused. So this fight went on for about 6 months. I got 6 months worth of 15 minutes of fame. But by the end of it, I was pretty much unemployable in any American university. I had been on a year-to-year contract, and nobody at that point was likely to give me any more of those contracts because they lost a lot of money. The university lost $500,000 overnight when I appeared on Hannity. And that was just the contributions canceled to the engineering school alone. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience in academic unfreedom. And things aren't any better now with people being attacked for opposing the genocide of Gaza. So, yeah, America isn't the beacon of freedom that it used to be. And, hey, we're recording this on July 4th. And, you know, maybe some patriotic Americans will think about that and think about trying to restore freedom to their country.
Let me get into this video, because at that time, this is probably the biggest host stars of Fox News, way bigger than Hannity. You were debating Hannity at that time. And now the former Fox News star, Tucker Carlson, is actually in line with what you were saying. Let's have a look.
You tried the other day to raise science-based questions about 9/11, and you asked, Building 7 was never hit by a plane. Why did it fall down in exactly the same way the first two towers did?
156 witnesses, you know, first responders saying they heard explosions before the buildings came down. There was never a steel building that ever collapsed because of a fire.
Isn't that ironic? So this is Tucker Carlson, and he actually has a senator also. Since 2011, you have this senator, Senator Ron Johnson, asking the same questions that you were asking at that time, and you're asking your students the same questions. You get let go, you lose your career over this thing that they're actually bringing up now.
Yeah, the irony is it's Fox News and the biggest star in the Wisconsin Republican Party, the former Fox News host Tucker Carlson, and then Ron Johnson, who's the biggest Wisconsin Republican. Back in 2006, Fox News and the Wisconsin Republicans were screaming to get me thrown out of the university for saying exactly the same thing that Tucker and Ron Johnson are saying today. So it's funny how things come, you know, what comes around goes around, I guess. But yeah, I have a tremendous respect for Senator Johnson's courage, and I appreciate that Tucker Carlson has finally started asking those hard questions.
What do you see now, the tide? Do you see how the tide is shifting now? You can see, like, this was something taboo to talk about, but they're actually now discussing it. You have this senator. We're going to play another clip with another congressman. We'll play a clip also from the news. What goes to your mind when you're seeing this? And you just mentioned this, that these are people this is a senator from Wisconsin.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, when I was fighting for academic freedom in 2006, it was a straight up party line issue where the Democrats almost unanimously were in favor of allowing me to continue to teach and ask whatever questions I wanted to ask, because that's academic freedom. And the Republicans were all saying I should be fired because I was unpatriotic and I was teaching crazy conspiracy theories. But somewhere things flipped, and I suppose maybe Trump had something to do with that. But today, it's Tucker Carlson, the former Fox News host, and Ron Johnson, the biggest Republican out of Wisconsin, who are saying those things. So, and it's funny, before I left for Morocco 2 years ago, I started hanging around with some of these Wisconsin Republicans, and a whole bunch of them have come around on 9/11. Interestingly, actually some of them, because I converted a few back in 2006, and they've been slowly spreading the word ever since. So it's, you can't completely bottle up the truth forever.
What do you see happening now? Before that, let's get into another, that's a senator, let's get into a congressman here.
It's our country. It happened to 3,000 of our fellow Americans. We have an absolute right to know what happened. It's not even a question. And it was almost 25 years ago. So spare me your lectures about national security. But can I ask you this? So, by the way, I never questioned anything about 9/11, and I actively attacked people who did. I'm ashamed of that, but that's a fact. I did it on tape more than once. Because my feeling was, that's divisive or whatever. I was a child and an idiot. But what began to make me wonder, and I have no idea what happened in 9/11, but it's very clear that there's a lot of lying around it, was the collapse of Building 7. And all the wackos would be like, Building 7, Building 7. I'd be like, shut up, wackos. And then if you just sort of look at it, you're like, well, that is very weird, actually. No plane hit that building in it. Does this happen a lot when buildings catch fire? Right, okay.
Besides being a firefighter, I work for the INA, largest insurance company in North America. I was responsible for training their fire protection arson people for 18 years. That doesn't happen. You never have a 47-story building just collapse, which this is. Even Donald Trump, I have a tape of him speaking on 9/11. And Donald Trump, which I'll give you a copy
I've seen it.
Yeah. In his own words, says,
there was a hole in the steel. And this is steel that was, you remember the width of the windows in the World Trade Center, folks? I think you if you were ever up there, they were quite narrow. And in between was this heavy steel. I said, how could a plane, even a 767 or a 747 or whatever it might have been, how could it possibly go through the steel? I happen to think that they had not only a plane, but they had bombs that exploded almost simultaneously, because I just can't imagine anything being able to go through that wall. Most buildings are built with the steel is on the inside around the elevator shaft. This one was built from the outside, which is the strongest structure you can have, and it was almost just like a can of soup.
That's controlled demolition.
Yeah, I mean,
he said even Donald Trump believes it was a controlled demolition. Do you know this congressman? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's Congressman Kurt Weldon, and he tried to open up an investigation of certain aspects of 9/11 back in sort of the late 2000s, sort of 2008, 7, 8, 9, I guess, maybe a little before that even. And I was strongly supporting him at the time. He wanted to investigate why it was that he was hearing from whistleblowers like Colonel Anthony Schaefer, who had worked for a terrorist tracking division of the U.S. military. And he had uncovered these many of the alleged 19 hijackers, who of course didn't hijack anything, but anyway, he had been all over those guys like a year before 9/11, and he had been ordered by his superiors to forget that he had ever heard of Muhammad Atta or these other people who would later be blamed for 9/11. He was actually told to put little yellow sticky pads over their faces on his huge wall chart that he had built, featuring many of these people who would later be blamed for 9/11. He was told to forget about them, put yellow sticky pads over their faces, and we don't ever want you to look into this again. That was all, I forget, a year or so before 9/11. So when Weldon heard this, he was a congressman. I think he was from Pennsylvania, if I recall. Colonel Schaefer went to Weldon and others, and Weldon was very interested and tried to get an investigation going of what did the U.S. intelligence services know and when did they know it about these alleged 19 hijackers. And then, of course, some dubious characters ginned up a various kind of political pushback against Weldon and got him forced out of Congress. Interestingly, Eddie, back in 2000, you know, it was earlier. It was, must have been like 2005, I think. I had actually called Wisconsin Public Radio during an interview with Senator Barbara Boxer, the U.S. Senator from California. And I said to her, I said, Senator Boxer, are you aware of Kurt Weldon's investigation in the House of what we, what the services knew about these alleged hijackers before 9/11? You know, we've learned that they trained at secure U.S. military facilities. They were shadowed by Mossad agents. They came over on special CIA snitch visas from Saudi Arabia, the 15 of them who were Saudis did, and so on. And of course, they were also not the least bit Islamic in their lifestyle, to say the least. They were hard drinkers, heavy drug users. The guy who was posing as Muhammad Atta, who actually was a fluent speaker of Hebrew, which Muhammad Atta, the real Muhammad Atta, was not, was dating a pink-haired stripper named Amanda Keller. So anyways, I gave this spiel like that to Barbara Boxer on live radio and then said, so Senator Boxer, given all of that, do you support Congressman Weldon's call for a new investigation? And Senator Boxer, bless her heart, answered me. She said, well, what you just said isn't what the 9/11 Commission said, but that doesn't mean it isn't true. But my first priority is to end the war in Iraq. So that's like a direct quote from Senator Barbara Boxer. And I was kind of floored by that. And of course, that created a viral story in the alternative media. So yeah, Kurt Weldon made a good effort, and I'm glad they didn't kill him. They just got forced him out of Congress.
Wow. This is amazing. We're seeing all this unfolding now, and there's not a American, when you mention Islam, that somehow in his subconscious, I was changing a flat tire and I had somebody come to, a real nice man, came to help me out. And then after we finished changing the tire, we started talking and offered him a smoothie, and it was going great, the conversation. Then I asked him, so what do you know about Islam? He was like, nothing except what I heard from 9/11, what he saw from 9/11. So there's this association in the back of people's heads with 9/11. Do you think we're at the beginning steps of that shifting with people like the likes of Tucker Carlson, the Candace Owens, these congressmen, senators? And let me also show you this clip. This is from a mainstream news outlet.
People, to make sure that you're not just somebody with a wacky idea.
Right.
Okay, you come with some science to you. What is the official reason for the collapse of the World Trade Center Tower?
Well, we're told that the planes hit the buildings, and there was an explosion and a fire, and about an hour and a half later, in the case of the North Tower, the buildings collapsed due to structural weakening due to the fires. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we don't have large gradual deformations associated with collapses, and fires in high-rises have never brought down a steel frame of high-rise building at all, ever. And what we have, unfortunately, is the evidence in the Twin Towers and the third skyscraper to collapse that day, which most people don't know anything about it. We have the evidence of the 10 key features of controlled demolition. In the case of Building 7, it collapses straight down into its own footprint at free fall speed in the first 100 feet. It's dropping, as you can see, symmetrically, smoothly, at free fall speed in the first 100 feet, 2.5 seconds. This is uncanny. There's 40,000 tons of structural steel designed to resist this collapse.
What, a 47-story building?
Yeah. This is called Building 7, right? A football field away from the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what we're showing is left what happened. In fact, right is a controlled, where you are using, or the people who made this happen, used demolition.
Indeed, and this is a direct comparison. And you can see that, indeed, almost free fall speed, free fall acceleration through 40,000 tons of structural steel. That is uncanny. So we have 700 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation as a result of this evidence and the evidence in the World Trade Center that is very explosive. Almost every architect and engineer we show this information to agrees with us that these are controlled demolitions. If we can get them to look at the information, because obviously the implications of a controlled demolition are dark for our country.
Yeah.
Because that means somebody besides Al-Qaeda was involved. Because these have to be easily three of the most highly secure buildings outside.
Your thoughts?
Well, it's great to see Richard Gage getting some mainstream media attention. It's good to see this kind of information on, you know, high quality, you know, high production values, mainstream media platforms. And it's good to see people gradually waking up and realizing how important this is. You know, it's important for a lot of reasons. You know, one of them, as you mentioned, is that those of us who are Muslims who lived in through the aftermath of this found this highly annoying and disturbing, to say the least, to have our religion smeared as this supposed terrorist religion. It was a brainwashing operation. They clearly had thought it through and were all ready to go with the propaganda that, you know, Islam was a religion of suicidal maniacs and killers. And so that's one aspect of it. But another one is the country. The United States has a tradition of enlightenment values, freedom, pluralism, and so on. And all of that really took a hit with 9/11. And then finally, there's also the intellectual inquiry, the scientific inquiry, the academic freedom angle. You know, just not being able to talk about something this big and really, frankly, this obvious has done terrible things to America. It's turned America into a country of sheep, of cowards. The brave people who have tried to do something about this and speak out have been vilified. So the best people have been vilified, ostracized, and marginalized. And then the worst people, the neoconservatives who did it, have cemented their rule. And, you know, we're at a very strange moment right now as the neoconservatives, who were the party behind 9/11, they were the intellectual authors of it, are still very much in command. But their ideology has been challenged, and there are both from the left and from the right. I think that if this really comes out clearly in such a big way that the entire mainstream media starts showing what we just saw and admits that the 9/11 truth movement was right all along, and we get some kind of official investigation that genuinely seeks the truth about this, I think it will really, potentially, it could solve a whole lot of the worst problems that we're facing, including, you know, the genocide in Gaza and the world war that may be starting in the Middle East even as we speak. I'm convinced that the same kinds of reckless Machiavellian lunatics who are perpetrating genocide in Gaza are essentially the same group that orchestrated 9/11. And allowing these kinds of people to run the United States of America and lie to us all at this scale is just unacceptable. That's one of the reasons I left 2 years ago, is I no longer find the U.S. habitable after this. But if we fix this problem, I would be very happy to come back and celebrate.
If the University of Wisconsin called you, apologized, and said, you know what, we need you back, we made a mistake, would you accept?
Well, I'd have to talk to my wife. We're pretty settled here in Sadia, Morocco. But I'd certainly go back and spend some time there.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that happening now, what you just said? Do you see that more and more now? This movement is continuing this, that the truth is getting out there. More and more people are questioning, people like congressmen, senators. You mentioned that you also have spoken to different congressmen that also now are questioning. Where do you see this going?
Well, I think that it might actually take a crisis to force the issue, because for every step forward that we make, the side that wants to cover this up finds some way of kind of distracting the public. And basically, for instance, as I said, in 2006, the Democrats were not only in favor of academic freedom to discuss this kind of thing, but a whole lot of Democrats were at least vaguely aware that there was a huge problem with the official story of 9/11. And of course, many of them blamed it on the Republican President Bush and Cheney. And then Obama was elected in 2008, and suddenly it flipped, and people were, you know, the Democrats were largely put back to sleep. And now, interestingly enough, with the Trump movement of populists, or fake populists in some cases, it's become a situation where now a lot of Republicans are open to this information, people like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens. So I think the number of Democrats, the percentage of Democrats probably is not much higher now. It might even be lower than it was in, say, 2007, when polls show that 36% of the American people thought it likely or very likely that 9/11 was a false flag designed to launch wars. So it's a long haul. And to reach critical mass, you know, it would take something, I think, even bigger than, you know, a U.S. senator like Ron Johnson picking up where a U.S. representative like Kurt Weldon left off. It takes something more than Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson informing their audiences about it. You know, we would really, really need some kind of big breakout. And what that would be, I don't know. Possibly the right insider leak of crucial information could help. And possibly if somebody in charge of the major network really made the decision to go for it, then who knows? So it's touch and go. I think we're probably closer to breaking this issue now than ever. And that's been the way it's been for 20 years. So I just hope it doesn't take another 20 years. 20 months maybe would be nice.
Don't we see this in history happening before? This these events, like you had discussed previously, you had the... If people start putting and seeing the patterns, for example, this King David Hotel at that time, for people that don't know, most people don't know about these incidences, but this has come out. And can you discuss it? I'll mention some of these that, for instance, the King David Hotel, wasn't this something that it was an act that was perpetuated by a certain group of people? And then it was blamed. The intent was to blame Muslims for it. You have the RSS, is it the Liberty ship? What is it called? The RSS Liberty?
USS Liberty.
Yeah. USS Liberty. You have the USS Liberty, also another event that was false flag. And then the intention was to blame Muslim, the Levant affair. You also had the weapons of mass destruction lie, Iraq also, that then took us into a million lives being lost. It was by this also, by a particular group of people now, the Zionists, who also now Netanyahu got America involved. You're an expert in this area. You know these events quite well. And then you had this event. You had some, what was it? Some kind of dancing people who were dancing when this whole event happened. Also, so it's not far-fetched that these events are perpetuated, and then they try to go ahead and blame the Muslims, which Muslims had no involvement, or Islam is not. This has been used as a scapegoat. Can you touch upon these historical events and how they're actually now, they're not conspiracy theories. They're actually been uncovered to been false flags.
Yeah, and indeed, Candace Owens did a really good segment on the USS Liberty event in 1967, that Israeli attack on a U.S. spy ship working for the National Security Agency. Most people don't know much about that, but it was in the middle of the 1967 war. The U.S. had sent that spy ship towards the war zone, and the Israelis deliberately tried to sink it. And they killed 34 people, wounded about 170 others, and nearly sent the ship to the bottom, which was the intent. They were hoping that after sinking the ship, they would be able to blame it on Egypt and bring the U.S. into that war, Israel's war against Egypt. And so that was in 1967. You mentioned the Levant affair of 1954, when Israel bombed American targets in Egypt and tried to blame Egyptians. And then, you know, we also have the issue of assassinations. The Israelis, and before them the Zionists, before there was a state of Israel, were very strong on assassinating people. they sent letter bombs to Truman and to Churchill. They tried to assassinate George H.W. Bush during his presidency in Madrid. That's an interesting one that people can look up. Most people never heard of that. And they most likely killed John F. Kennedy and then presumably later his brother Robert. And that there's a lot of work on that. Michael Collins Piper wrote the seminal book, which is has been followed up on by Laurent Guyenot, a French historian. His name is G-U-Y-E-N-O-T. And just to, for people who aren't aware of this, just stop and ask yourself. We know that Robert Kennedy was shot after he won the California primary in 1968. He would have almost certainly become president had he not been killed. And he was shot from point blank range from behind with a pistol held against his skull and made powder burns on his skull. Sirhan Sirhan, the man who was blamed and convicted of that murder, was never closer than probably about 15 feet, and he was in front of Senator Kennedy at the time. So somebody shot Kennedy point blank from behind, and it was part of an orchestrated murder aimed to blame Sirhan Sirhan. Now, Sirhan Sirhan was a Palestinian, and he had been apparently hypnotized. He was found to be an extremely hypnotizable individual. And so he was hypnotized to randomly fire a few shots to distract everybody and allow the killer to kill Senator Kennedy. Now, the question is, who would choose a Palestinian patsy? What group would do that? And when we ask that about what happened to Bobby Kennedy in 1968, then we go back to 1963, and we notice that after the murder of John F. Kennedy, the patsy Lee Harvey Oswald, who was set up to take the blame and denied it, said, "I'm a patsy," was killed before he could tell his story by a Jewish mafiosi, Jack Rubinstein, otherwise known as Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby was a hitman and a bagman who worked for Mickey Cohen, who is the chief of Jewish organized crime on the West Coast, and also the man who had raised the most money for the State of Israel in all of American history. Mickey Cohen went up and down the West Coast, shaking down everybody, and he raised, I don't know how many tens or hundreds of millions of dollars for Israel. So that was the guy whose personal hitman murdered Lee Harvey Oswald. And so you just put those two things together, the Palestinian patsy in one case, and then the Jewish mafiosi with connections to Israel killing Lee Harvey Oswald. And you're a step towards seeing who's behind these kinds of crimes. In the case of John F. Kennedy, he was likely killed primarily because he was dedicated to shutting down Israel's nuclear program. And President Johnson, who took over after Kennedy, thanks to Kennedy's murder, was a huge supporter of Israel, who allowed Israel to steal American nuclear weapons. And then Johnson conspired with Israel in the 1967 war and was complicit in this attack on the USS Liberty. Johnson was quoted as saying, when he was first informed that the Liberty was in trouble, he said, "I want that bleep bleep ship to go to the bottom." And he was actually in bed with an Israeli Mossad spy at the time that he was interrupted about the USS Liberty. So the same group of people has been so reckless in their terrorism and their assassinations since long, even before Israel was founded. There's a book called State of Terror by Thomas Suarez that goes into, the subtitle is How Israel Created Modern Terrorism. And of course, it actually happened before Israel was even founded. The Zionists slaughtered not just Palestinians, but also the British. They slaughtered their fellow Jews, who were not radical enough in pushing for a Jewish state there. And that kind of mayhem has only accelerated since the creation of the State of Israel, with this long list of false flag terrorism and so on. So, you know, I kind of downplayed this when I first started talking about 9/11. I wanted just to show that the official story couldn't possibly be true. And I didn't want to point too hard at the perpetrators, especially Israel, because, you know, if you point a finger at Israel, you get all kinds of pushback, and it's harder to get any kind of media attention, but except for the wrong kind. But at some point, it became so obvious to me that it's just unavoidable. You know, it's clear every foreign policy expert will agree that the only real geostrategic beneficiary of 9/11 was the state of Israel, because it tricked the American military into coming in and basically removing all of the problematic regimes in the region that Israel didn't like, with one exception, Iran. And look what's happening now. Basically the state of Israel, like it's been compared to the toxoplasmosis parasite that takes over the brains of cats and mice and makes them act in self-destructive ways. And that's kind of what the state of Israel has done to the United States. It's taken over the command and control system in the same way toxoplasmosis takes over the brain of its victims. And it's really marching the U.S. into disaster, you know, one disaster after another, the loss of freedom, wasting $8 trillion on wars for Israel that are against U.S. strategic interests. And now today, risking World War III in this crazy war on Iran. I think that if we solve 9/11, if we expose 9/11 and show that it was probably, you know, what we'll find is that it was primarily orchestrated by the state of Israel and its American assets, I think we'll be in a position to cleanly sever this connection with this psychotic settler colonial genocide project that's squatting in occupied Palestine.
You think this history now that many people do not know, and it's very important because it dispels the myth that somehow, you know, because when you bring up Israel, when you bring up Jews, the people out there will start to, the politicians and whatnot, they'll try to make it like, oh, Muslims hate Jews and whatnot. But when you study the history, when Muslims were the superpower, Andalus, Spain, when you look at many academics, I've had on many Jewish rabbis who have come on and who has testified to this, that they thank Muslims who actually took them in from Christian persecution. And David Warnstein, he writes in the Jewish Chronicles that Islam saved the Jews. So how can you be taking Jews in, saving them, if your religion calls you to hate them? So how do you like to answer this?
And it's a very interesting issue. It's very complicated. The short version is that the Muslims got along better with Jews throughout most of history than Christians did. That's unquestionable. And why that is, it's a long debate, but probably the biggest single factor is that in Islam, we do have the number of injunctions to protect minority religious communities and to act with impartial justice. And so Muslim rulers haven't been perfect, obviously, but the general thrust of Islamic dogma and teaching and so on is that we are supposed to respect and protect minority religions, starting with Christianity and Judaism. So for that reason, Muslim rulers tended to allow Christian and Jewish minority communities to run their own affairs, and they often thrived under Muslim rule. And notably in Islamic Spain for quite some time, many centuries, in fact, the Christian and Jewish communities were doing very, very well. So it isn't that Islam has some problem with Jews, or Christians for that matter. But the real issue is that a certain extremist version of Jewish messianic millenarianism has mutated into Zionism, which is basically, you know, a lot of people would argue, many Jews, the Naturae Carta Jews and others would argue that Zionism is actually satanic. It's not properly Jewish, because the traditional Jewish belief was that returning to the Holy Land would only happen when God made it happen, and that Jews themselves should not even lift a little finger to make it happen. But bit by bit, this radical extremist fringe within Judaism pushed that away and started preaching that Jews should go back to the Holy Land and found their own state by hook or by crook. And ultimately that became, you know, by very unethical means. And so here we are today with much of the Jewish community actually convinced that this is a good idea to have Jews unite and invade the Holy Land and create a Jewish state there, even at the expense of the Palestinians who've been living there forever. And so it's a very tragic situation. And because the Zionists have captured much of the Jewish community, that's led to friction between Jews and Muslims, because Muslims are taught to respect justice. And what's happening in Palestine is such a grave injustice. It's so extreme that, you know, the Holy Land is being genocide is being perpetrated in the Holy Land. That's just not acceptable to Muslims. And so that's led to this tension between the Muslims and Jews. And it doesn't need to be there. And once Zionism is finished, I don't think we'll see anything like that tension again.
Are you familiar with the Scofield Bible and John Nelson Darby and the Christian Zionism that stems from this, and how Christians now believe this is a part of their faith to support what you're talking about, this modern day Holocaust that's happening against innocent men, women, children now? Babies are being just decimated there. And now Christians, who are supposed to, they promote love, Jesus, the Prince of Peace, but they're supporting this because they feel it's a part of their creed. And it all stems back. And now this is also something that's being talked about, that this is false. This was never part of the Christian teachings for over 1800 years, this dispensationalism. Can you go into that a little bit? Are you familiar with the con artist, con man, who now got the funding from Zionists, and then they ended up pushing over a million copies for free into the universities, churches, and slowly this is being uncovered, that this is a scam. This is not part of Christian teachings. And then you often hear this verse constantly. You just had Tucker Carlson with the Senator Ted Cruz. Did you see that interview? And then he's misquoting the Bible, and he's saying, whoever blesses Israel is blessed in Genesis. Whoever curses is cursed. This is like the go-to. And then in the footnotes in the Scofield Bible, this is where they get this idea that you have to support this state. But in actuality, it's talking about Abraham. It's not connected to the modern state. Can you go into this a little bit?
Yeah, it's in the 19th century, Cyrus P. Scofield was a pretty dubious character, not even all that literate, supposedly, bit of a snake oil salesman kind of guy. And somehow he ended up with his name on this very, very popular Bible, which, as you said, has been printed all over the world. I think it was Oxford that took it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he obviously had help. Scofield obviously did, unlike Oswald, you know, Scofield did not act alone. So there was an orchestrated effort, I think, to get Christians on board with Zionism. And so there's been a lot of money and power and propaganda behind this. Obviously, some of the world's very wealthiest, most powerful people have been hardcore Zionist ideologues since the days of, you know, the Rothschilds and Disraeli in the 19th century, at the time when Scofield was doing his thing. But in terms of Christian ideology, it's really quite astounding that Christians who are taught that Jesus, peace upon him, was the Prince of Peace, who turned the other cheek and so on, although he was pretty hard on those money changers in the temple. But if you know that the Bible's account, or the New Testament's account of the career of Jesus, is obviously completely contradictory to supporting genocide and these horrors that we're seeing in Palestine. So there's been a real major propaganda operation to try to convince Christians to support this genocidal Zionist project. And I think part of the reason that it's worked is that within Christianity, there is this belief that there, you know, the Bible is divided into the Old Testament, which is the Torah, and the New Testament, which is the Injil, or the Gospels. And the Old Testament, or the Torah, is, it reads a lot like a sort of a tribal a myth of tribal conquests and, you know, a tribe's conflicts with its neighbors. And it records a history of the Jewish people in which it seems that throughout much of that, the early history, their version of God is not the universal God that we know of today, but rather a tribal God who is viewed by his followers as just one among many gods, but he's the God of their tribe. And he tells them to go out and smash the idols, meaning the gods of the other tribes, and steal their loot and give it to Yahweh or give it to the high priests of Yahweh. So there's a lot of the Old Testament that is really pretty problematic from the standpoint of people whose holy books are either the Quran or the New Testament. And I think that by steering Christians towards a really unsophisticated and really morally indefensible reading of the Old Testament, the Zionists have kind of succeeded in brainwashing them and turning them into something very, very different from real Christians. You know, real Christians, Christianity is a religion of love, and that's great. I think Shuon said that Christianity is a religion of love, Islam is a religion of knowledge. But of course, they both have, you know, Islam has plenty of love and Christianity has plenty of knowledge as well. But the reality of Christianity and of universal monotheism has been distorted, I think, by this bad interpretation of these problematic elements of the Old Testament. So that's where I think the problem lies. That is that the Christians were vulnerable to this because they accept the Old Testament as inerrant gospel, in which every single word comes straight from God. And we Muslims, of course, know about Tahrif, that is the earlier revelations were to some extent distorted by the transmitters. And so we don't have to accept every bizarre or immoral thing that we might come across in the Old Testament as gospel, because we have a well-preserved book, the Quran. And so I think the Christians who haven't figured out how to deal with the Old Testament properly, and this would be more Protestants actually than the Catholics or Orthodox Christians, have been vulnerable to this brainwashing by the Zionists.
Just a couple more questions. We dispelling this myth when we met before of Islam and Muslims having anything to do with this evil event that happened. And now with more and more people, the senators being on the news, the congressmen, the greatest host of Fox News actually talking about this, raising questions, and more people are starting to not believe the official narrative. And do you think people are going to finally wake up if this continues to come out and realize that Islam truly has nothing to do with such evil actions? Muslims, you mentioned some of the actions of people who are somehow connected, nothing to do with it. Islam being used as a scapegoat, that those people will start to have more an affinity now to the shift with all the negativity. You think this can shift them into now, as they were raising questions about the event and the official narrative, now being programmed for so long to think negatively about Islam, that the counter can happen, that they can start also looking into Islam to see really truly what the teachings of Islam is, and hopefully leading them to the beauty of this way of life that's actually from the Creator, submission to the will of God, not the creation. What do you think?
Yeah, inshallah, that can happen. We've seen some of it already. Interestingly enough, even during the periods of the strongest demonization of Islam, some folks who didn't know anything at all about it looked into it and found the beauty of it and came to Islam. And that process has been going on, but it's been kind of swimming against the current. And today, if we actually do get a complete reconsideration of 9/11 and the war on terror, and also I think a reconsideration of Zionism, which will tie in, you know, they're all tied in together, I think that that shift very likely could open up even more minds, like in much greater numbers than we've seen in the past, because I think the West really needs a lot of the values that Islam carries, an insistence on justice that's so important. You know, it's just a lot more clear in Islamic teaching that we're supposed to aim at full impartial justice, and that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is just. That teaching is really important in a world where injustice is so far out of control. And I think also, you know, there are all sorts of other areas too where kinds of traditional values and family values have fallen by the wayside. And Islam has not succumb to that as much as some of the other traditions have. And I think Western people could benefit from that. And then finally, there's the mysticism. That's what first attracted me to Islam. That is the way that we can actually experience a taste of getting closer to the divine. And that's ultimately, in a sense, I think that's the real test of religion in the modern period, because we've got so much information around us. We can hear, this is what the Buddhists think, this is what the Muslims, the Jews, the Christians, the atheists, the materialists, the people of existentialists, all of these different schools of thought. We can see, you know, they're all talking and arguing. It's all right there with a, you know, click of your phone, and you can hear it. And in that situation, like where we can hear the dogmas and the ideas, the disembodied sort of ideas of everybody, well, that's all great. You know, the idea of justice, as I said, is great. But what we really need is to be able to get a little taste of the reality of it, to know it. Like people who've actually had an experience where they have been overwhelmed by the feeling, you know, a kind of a closeness to God, and actually a change of consciousness to some extent. Those people are really going, they're not going to change after that. They know that it's real. And I think that Islam has an incredibly rich heritage of this sort of thing. And that if you're going to, you know, taste the reality of the absolute transcendent, that, you know, starting out with the Islamic teaching is more likely to kind of get you there on the straight path, the Sirat al-Mustaqim, than, you know, if you start out with ideology around people, or, you know, around the Jewish tribe and its figures, or around, you know, the person of Jesus, alayhi salam, and so on, and dogmas about the, you know, trinities and you know, crucifixions and this and that, and ideas that you have to believe, that every, it's all about just belief, and you know, if you believe this, you'll be saved, and, you know, all of these things that have crept into other religions, I think, can be a little distracting. And I think Islam really offers a very straight, clean version of the essential truth of monotheism. And it's not only good for the ideas, the abstract ideas, but also for tasting the reality, which we can, you know, we get a little bit of a taste of that reality each time we pray, and we can cultivate it to whatever extent we're capable of. So yeah, I think the West really could use a hard look at the positive side of Islam.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even the hardliners, those who can love and support the people who say the most nastiest, vilest things about Jesus, that he's in the hellfire burning in feces, his mother laid down with a Roman soldier. And on the other side, you have us who love and revere Jesus, as the Bible calls him, a prophet, the Messiah, that there's a whole chapter that is in the verbatim word of God Almighty, the Quran, named after his blessed mother. Most of them, they don't know these facts. They haven't sat. I find it ironic that, you know, I'll try to reach out and talk to some Christians, come together, hardliners who'll be on X, and they'll be just spewing all this hate. I say, hey, have you ever sat, broke bread with a Muslim? Let's go ahead and talk. You can go ahead and form a relationship with someone who's cursing your God and Savior. But here, if you say one negative thing we believe about Jesus, if you deny Jesus, that you can end up in the hellfire. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think that's especially important today, because, you know, we have this sense of the end times, right? Whether it's because of, you know, nuclear war is just one button push away, or artificial intelligence could get out of control and create the singularity, and that would be the end for us, and so on. You know, technology has made our situation both more comfortable and more precarious. And there is this sense that we're sort of at the end. And so I think that we need to look at what these religions, you know, say about sort of the end of things. And essentially, the last word for both Islam and Christianity is that Jesus is the Messiah, and alayhi salam, when he comes back, whatever that means, right? Maybe it means his spiritual values return to the world, that things will be radically better. And the other side, the Jewish teaching has traditionally been very hostile to Jesus for the most part, as you said. And so if we are in this end time stage of the Christ versus the Antichrist, let's face it, the Muslims and the Christians are both on the side of Jesus, alayhi salam. And maybe some Jews are, but the bulk of the Jewish tradition is not. The Jews are being a Jew basically means that you're part of the group that rejected Jesus. That's the definition. The Jews who accepted Jesus now call themselves Christians. So if we're in the end times and the figure of Jesus, the one and only true Messiah, is crucial to everybody's notion of the end times, which, you know, hey, Christians, who do you want to be with? The people who love Jesus and are praying for his return, or the people who are boiling him in excrement? I mean, I would think that would be a no-brainer.
Thank you, Dr. Barrett. Thank you very much for sharing some time with us, going over these reactions. God bless you. It was good having you on the program again.
Thanks, Eddie. It's a great conversation. Appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.